Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and Anne Guest.
Welcome along to this special podcast episode. You're with myself, Paul Spain,
Nate Dunn,
and Rod Drury.
Rod, great to have you here. We're here to talk to you a little bit about Xero.
I know a little bit about that, yeah.
Well, we're hoping so. So just to kick off, maybe you can give a little bit of a background to the listeners of how you ended up launching Xero and, you know, where the ideas and so on came from. You'd had Aftermail prior to Xero and you sold that off. So you can maybe share a little bit of that story.
Yeah, so all the things I've done have been problems that I've sort of seen in my own world that I really wanted to fix. And we were doing a lot of internet application development, and I worked in an accounting practice. I was at Arthur Young and Ernst & Young, and I'd done a lot of implementation of accounting software. And it was actually when Active Server Pages version 2 came out with Masterpage and all that sort of stuff, and I was sort of just finishing off a business I was doing in the US. I thought, man, it'd be really cool to build a accounting system online. So I took a couple of weeks and locked myself in my office at home and just started writing, and it felt really good. At that point, we'd done okay. I'd sold Glazier Systems and done a few other things, but I hadn't really had that big score, and I had seen this pattern of US public companies having to acquire tech companies, so I thought it'd be really good to make some money. So I built this online accounting kind of prototype, and it felt really nice. That didn't feel like the sort of business you'd build up quickly and sell. It would take a long time to get customers, and you don't really want to sell the base. So I was also, at the same time, was really annoyed that Microsoft Exchange wasn't sitting over SQL Server, and had a guy called Mike Upshon get back from the UK, and he was a bit of a crack programmer. So we sort of sat down and sort of thought, hey, what would email look like if it was actually modeled properly? And so I started playing around with that, and I thought, actually, this is a really good candidate for building up quickly and selling it to make some money. And part of it, I think, was, you know, coming from a small set of rocks in the South Pacific, was to prove that we could build up a bit of global technology that was really good. So it was nice to get the money out of Aftermail, and it was only really 18 months after starting the business where the napkin came across the table in Orange County. We ended up getting $15 million US in cash and $20 million of potential earnout, which we didn't get any of, which was a really good lesson. But the coolest thing actually was that year we won at the big Microsoft Global Conference. We won Best Exchange Product, and that proved to us we could actually build some world-class technology. So that gave the war chest to start what became Xero. But as we were doing Aftermail and having built a bit of accounting software before, it just became clearer and clearer, just this massive opportunity.
Great. And when was it that you actually started, that Xero started as an entity?
So it was, must have been around 2006. And when we did it, when we sold Aftermail, we had about 23 people and everyone's doing four or five different jobs. And the model, we saw this was a really big build. It would take a lot of time. We needed about 50 people. And 50 people is $500,000 a month, just a crazy amount of money. And we figured we'd probably need that for around 3 years. So I kind of needed $15 million bucks. And back in those days, the biggest venture capital deal done was probably $2 or $3 million, and that would have been on a valuation of $5 million or something. We probably could have raised $15 million up on the US West Coast, but it would have had a valuation of $20 million, and the business would have sold by now. So the traditional venture capital route wasn't available to us. So off the back of selling Aftermail, Jeff Ross had done 42 Below, which he listed on the stock exchange sort of as an idea, and ended up selling it to Bacardi. And I was on the board of Trade Me when that sold. There was a, right at that time, we could actually tell a big story and float the company. So a lot of people say, well, why did you take Xero public? Well, that was really the only way we had to fund a business and do it properly. So, you know, fast forward 6 years now, it's really exciting. We have 400 staff, 160,000 customers, 60% of our revenue is offshore. We're annualized revenue run rate now, over 50 million. And, you know, we've got a $1.5 billion market cap.
Yeah, I think some pretty impressive numbers. Now, you know, the market cap, obviously, you know, that's something based around you know, what people see as the, you know, the future potential of Xero. Now, you mentioned your customer base there. What was it, 160 odd thousand customers. How big is that market for accounting, you know, small business, small to medium business accounning software? This is, you know, we're talking hundreds of millions of users potentially.
Yeah, I mean, in the US there's 20 million alone. Then you look at South America and all that, it is just huge. And so one of the ways that techniques we've used for people to kind of work out what we could be worth is saying, well, imagine the business with a million customers, and then people can sort of do their spreadsheets. So, I mean, our share price has gone up really fast, and it's tempting, I think, from a New Zealand point of view to go, well, have those guys have 10x'd, it must all be over. Mm. But what's happened in the last year is we've moved from being an interesting New Zealand company to a company that's right on the global stage. And the people that have been buying at these levels have been sophisticated US investors. There's some quite interesting things happening there. So when we talk to these guys out of Boston and New York who are interested in this cloud space, they're betting on technology trends they've seen before. So, you know, when maybe 30 or 40 years ago, however long it was, the mainframe computer market went from nothing to, you know, maybe a few billion dollars. Then we saw the mini computer thing, and mainframes went to zero. Mini computers maybe got up to $10 billion. And then the client server happened. So mini computers, you know, companies like DEC and those sort of, I can't remember the names of them now, they went from to nothing. And then the, you know, client server vendors went up. There's probably $30 or $40 billion worth of revenue in that market. And exactly the same thing's happening with the cloud. So client-server revenues will start to fall soon, and I think the numbers I've seen, there's about $30 billion of revenue in cloud at the moment, and the numbers we're seeing or hearing is that'll be a trillion-dollar market over the next 5 to 10 years. So in the US, you have these very sophisticated investors that have, you know, literally billions under management, and they get paid when they place funds. So they're looking for bets. They want to bet on big trends. So when you start thinking, I want to get into cloud, you map the market. There's enterprise, so Workday, Salesforce, those sort of companies. There's mid-market companies like NetSuite. And then you look at the small business space, and they very quickly find Xero.
Yeah, good. And, I mean, how did you establish those relationships to get some of the investors on board that you've got, the likes of Peter Thiel and so on? You know, how do you get those things in place? Being from little old New Zealand, you know, we're well away from where a lot of those investment dollars are and so on.
Yeah, so you think that, but actually, New Zealand has a very special place in the global titans landscape. So if you've been driving around the provinces or even down in Auckland, you'll see quite a large number of private jets that are around the place. So my understanding is, you know, Barmer and Gates from Microsoft are down here all the time. The Google jet was down here quite a lot a few years ago. I was in a meeting with in Austin, Texas a few years ago, and Adam Dell, Michael Dell's brother, Michael's down here all the time, but Adam Dell came into the meeting and goes, "Hey, you guys are the Kiwis." We said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Oh, I'm down there skiing every year." "What?" And he said, "Yeah, I was at Fox last year. I was at Wanaka the year before." So those sort of global titans of tech are already down here. I think the head of SAP has a house here. I was at a place the other day, and a woman walked past, and I thought, she looks familiar. And someone said, "Yeah, that's the global head of IBM. So if you're... Well, I think one of the reasons for that is if you're right at the very top of the tech industry and you've got enough money for the really big jet that can fly for a long way, where do you go? Mm. You know, you might sit there with your plane at Moffett Field and, you know, go to New York, everyone stays dressed and it's all very nice. You come down to New Zealand, you know, you put your pajamas on, you sleep in the hammocks, you get to use all of the toys. So I think you think we're an interesting thing being an overnight flight from the US West Coast. And I think a lot of the people in tech are here. So Peter Thiel was down here, loves New Zealand, had bought a house, got involved with the New Zealand, our Trade New Zealand and the investment arm of that. We got to meet him as soon as they showed any interest. "Let's see you at your place." So fly up there, take New Zealand out of the equation. And, you know, one of the neat things, one of the highlights of Xero, you know, a lot of the listeners would have seen the Social Network movie where Mark Zuckerberg goes and pitches to Peter Thiel and got $250,000. Well, we did that meeting and got $4 million.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
With you know, you're going into a market where you've got an incumbent like MYOB, and it, I think in the mindset of small Kiwi businesses, that when you're going to start off, the you know, one of the first things you do is you go down to your retailer and buy MYOB, and that's what you set up with your accounts. What sort of challenges have you seen going up against something that's so, well, was so entrenched in small business owners' minds?
Yeah, I mean, that's really hard. Those companies have been around for a long time and they have brand, but you get these sort of once-in-a-lifetime opportunities where the technology shifts. So our hypothesis was the incumbents would actually struggle moving to the cloud, and that's sort of paid off. So in the cloud, everything's different. The distribution model's different. So under the old days, you'd go down to Harvey Norman's. There's a box. The retailer probably takes half the box price. The software provider gets their revenue really from selling support contracts and earns margin by pushing support to the lowest cost call center, where the first question is, which version of software do you have? So you can't really sell cloud software in a retail store because there's no upfront price to sell. So everything's different. The channel's different. The technology is different. The type of developers you need is different. The support model is different. Everything was different. And it's actually much easier starting from scratch, as long as you've got the capital to get through those first few years, which we managed to do by listing. So the big picture, though, is accounting software is only really the tickets to the game. The kind of mega trends that we're betting on is, you know, biggest market in the world is all consumers, and no one likes paying for anything. So, you know, that's kind of hard. The next biggest market must be small business owners, and even though all small business owners are also consumers, with your small business hat on, you'll pay for stuff. So you've got money coming in, you're going to spend money to make money. So we think the small business internet is one of the biggest monetizable opportunities on the web. The problem is, though, that it's very expensive to sell to small business. So Oracle, SAP, the big global financial software companies, have never been able to scale down to sell. They've never. So all the brains of financial software have applied their talents to the Fortune 1000 companies. And what the cloud does is completely change the economics of selling to small business, because you're not going on site, you're not sending CDs, you build something once, and there's very low marginal cost for a new person to come through. So this is now a land grab of having no innovation for 20 years. You've seen companies like us raised $140 million, we've spent probably 70 plus so far, and we're massively investing in the space.
I remember being at a couple of the Xero conferences, and you were talking about how, and you know, just before this, we were talking about how Twitter is starting to cut off their developers and everyone that sort of helped grow Twitter to where they are through limitations with their API and other things. What's your sort of, and what's Xero's feeling behind people such as my company that use the Xero API to extend and to move into these particular verticals? I'm assuming that's another way that you're going to increase your growth.
Yeah, I think what's kind of neat about us, because we're technologists, we're not really business people. We're kind of business people by accident, because we have attention span of 3-year-olds and want to build software companies. So, you know, we never really think about this as a hard ass sort of corporate thing. We actually really enjoy building software and saving people money. It's a really kind of purposeful thing to do. And I think also when you're a bit older and all that sort of stuff, you have real clear values about what you're trying to do. So for us, we really believe in the ecosystem. Partnering is one of our core values. We don't have to charge our partners for anything, because we all win if we all work together. And it's been interesting, as we've got a bit more profile, seeing some, you know, really large brands doing things that I can understand why they do them, but it just doesn't make sense to me. So Twitter's a good example. They don't really love their users, and I understand that the users aren't their customers, their advertisers are their customers. But when they killed the ecosystem for all that innovation around the outside, and then didn't even replace those tools with their own tools, like they didn't do a retina version, and they said they're not going to, they killed all the Mac OS X clients and then decided they weren't going to invest in their own one. I just don't get that. Why would you make your users not like you? It just doesn't make sense. Mm.
So it's pretty strange how they've, you know, bought out TweetDeck and then they've, you know, basically killing it off.
Yeah. So, but you know, there is a science of life. Like, they have just said they are, and have just updated and added the Retina, you know, functionality to the Twitter client, and hopefully they'll add all the Twitter cards and all that sort of stuff. But you see it right across the board. You see, you know, even with Apple having this very locked down, closed view, this app view, not a widget view, or an information centric view, which is all about, you know, control of the experience and all that sort of stuff. So, I don't know. I just think there's an interesting when you're from a small country like New Zealand and you know a lot of people and it is a real village, I think your kind of values and your ethics are very well tuned because you can't kind of sort of upset people. So maybe that characteristic is a competitive advantage we have. And so it's very natural for us to partner and be generous with partners.
And do you think being from New Zealand, we have a much better view of how to create products that are aimed at a global audience? You know, I often see things come out of the US. And Microsoft's an example. You mentioned Windows Phone in previous discussion. And, one thing that they had was a podcast capability for the US users, not available to users anywhere else, in the world. And, we often see these things from US companies that are very, very US-centric. Do you think, is that something that's sort of helping you on a global basis, that Kiwis tend to take a much broader view of the world?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And because we're from such a small little sort of pond with 4 million customers, if you're going to do anything of scale, you've got to get sure. So you've got to be thinking internationally from day one. Whereas I've seen it before, you're in the US, it's a massive market. You can see this massive market. So you're going to go and do that first. We're finding that with Intuit. So, you would think they're a global company. We actually do very little outside of the US, even at their scale. Mm-hmm. It was interesting when we started meeting some other sort of smaller accounting software vendors that were going in the US and had seen our numbers go crazy, because you always think that you're disadvantaged being from down here. These guys are saying, you guys are so lucky starting in a small market where you know everybody and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, I think there's actually been advantages from moving here. I think, under the enterprise software world where you had to go and install software and have big consulting organizations, the natural gravity was the US because they already have the global sales forces. So we saw the companies from New Zealand, Australia, Israel, Europe would get to a certain size and sell to a US public company. But the internet is quite different, and I think we're seeing a lot more innovation happening outside of the US. In fact, one of the things I've noticed when you go up there is the guys that have done really well that are very young, because it's such a big market. If you smack it out of the park, it's a big number and you do it pretty early. So, I go up there in my late 40s and my peer CEOs are in their mid-30s. So you've had double the business experience. So because we tend to have to do it in a series of small steps. So I think that kind of global view, we can take a chocolate out of every box and people seem to like us. I don't think there's any real disadvantages, and some really cool advantages are coming from New Zealand.
And for there's a lot of small businesses here in New Zealand that know that their potential is in expanding into the global market, but they don't know how to do it. What do you think that business owners here should be doing in order to be more successful globally? Because, surely, with the decline in opportunity for New Zealand to be a nation that, manufactures a lot of products, we've got to change our economy and where we generate our revenue, right?
Yeah, and some of the things that we talk about a lot is, we've sort of forgotten we're a small subscale market, and scale, it's really hard to sell when you don't have a lot of scale. And I remember being in Nelson just recently and walking past, there was no one on the main street, walked past a restaurant, there's the business owner sort of behind the bar looking out longingly, and there's basically tumbleweeds going down the street. And then a couple of weeks later, we're in a family holiday in Waikiki, and we're standing outside this place as vile as the Cheesecake Factory, and there's 400 people outside with those little buzzers telling you that your table's ready. How much easier it is to do a business when there's real scale. And the issues with scale, they get worse in a very slow pace. It's the frog being boiled in the pot thing. So student class sizes go up a few more. Hospital wait lists go up. A whole lot of little things. The quality of education is not quite as good. So these are the sort of things that happen. So there's no burning platform, but you often hear from New Zealanders, you come back to the 5 years gap, and it's, oh my God, this place is, it looks a bit tatty, there's not the investment. So I think, part of the messaging is, especially for us in the technology industry, if we're not going to export, who is? You know, everyone should wake up thinking, how do I contribute to the export value chain? And the great thing is, all of this new technology allows you to play and be a niche player in a large global market. And it's a huge amount of fun. You get to do a couple of conferences a year and meet people that are interesting and buy your Nikes and, you know, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, it is a lot of fun, I guess being a Kiwi, getting, going offshore and so on. But, you know, how do companies that don't have the experience and the connections and so on do that? Where do they look for help? I mean, obviously you had experience when starting Xero. You had a level of funding to draw on, and when you went out and did that IPO, you had a reputation to draw on. But I guess there's a lot of a lot of pretty smart Kiwis that are trying to do things, but they don't know how to get from having that great idea to where they can really execute and get the funding, where they can sell their products and so on.
Yeah, so I think thinking about entrepreneurship as a series of baby steps. So with each deal you do, each business, you get a bit more of your own capital, a bit more experience, better networks and all those sort of things. So you always hear about the story of the person that smacked it out of the park on their first deal, but much more repeatable is doing a number of steps where you gather all these things as you go forward. So if you think that's the model, then on the first one, it's not about the valuation of the angel round and all that sort of stuff. It's about getting into the game, having the capital to have a go, being able to get a bit of a win and pay your shareholders back so they have a good result and they'll come back and back you the next time. So that's one pathway, thinking about it doing in a series of small steps. What's changed since we did this is we actually now have global sort of technology companies of scale. So the likes of Orion up in Auckland, Venn's just raised a bunch of money. They're going to hire a bunch of people. We're trying to hire 200 or 300 people at the moment. So there is now actually these global companies we can come in and get that experience, which that just wasn't around when I started. So if you're really interested in this stuff, come and work for a company like us for a few years, get that experience, build your networks, do some travel and see what happens.
And how hard do you find it to get people? Doing something, I guess that's different to what most other businesses in the country are doing. We don't have necessarily a huge pool of people.
There are lots of people. So, there's a lot of New Zealand software developers are tied up in the services business doing fee-for-service work, and they just haven't been sort of product companies. Product companies always felt like a risk. If you were going into a senior person, an early-stage product company, you're probably taking a salary sacrifice and all that sort of stuff. That's been risky. But now we're actually seeing the maturity of properly funded companies, proper jobs with shares and all that good sort of stuff. So there needs to be this migration away from, I think people feeling like they have an obligation not just go and charge out their time, but do actually build IP that builds overnight, that other New Zealanders can invest in and get a return on. So it is changing, and a lot of the work that we've been doing is about and some of the paying it forward stuff is just being out there advocating for product building IP type companies.
Mm. Now looking at social media, I guess been quite a key tool as far as Xero is concerned. Can you sort of maybe share some areas where you've really leveraged? I know a while ago you were mentioning on Twitter about how useful you found LinkedIn, because you're able to look up all your competitors' people and find people of particular interest and snaffle them. Whereas I guess in years go by, that information about who worked for who wasn't always quite so public.
Yeah, that's always good fun stuff. So we were lucky. I think when you're starting a business, it's easy to start with a social media program and just be open about it. It's kind of, I think it's almost a natural state now. Whereas if you're a large incumbent, it's very difficult to turn on social media, because not for any one reason, but you're going to have 1,000 people that hate you. So we're all about exploiting those advantages. So our philosophy was being very open from the start. In a little country like New Zealand, it's, things like Twitter are actually really quite a lot of fun. But you end up finding that the journalists follow you with the decline of real journalism. It's all about page views now. it's very easy to, you know, get your stream of consciousness out there and start stories and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it was really an interesting example was in the last couple of weeks when the IRD was talking about this 1.5 billion, starts off with a tweet, and I was really angry, so I jumped onto Google Plus and wrote a few paragraphs really in about 10 minutes, and then that got reposted onto the NBR, became the most commented story, and then it's on the news, there's TV cameras coming in, so it's quite amazing.
And this started with you just making a comment about the story that the IRD was looking to invest that in, and redeveloping their in-house
software. Yeah, I was kind of annoyed that I had to do it. There's plenty of... you know, I don't really want to be the poster child for the New Zealand IT services industry. I'm doing enough stuff, but those guys should step up as well. But it's, one of the things I worry about is, you know, we are covered a lot, but that's really because there's not a lot of other things going on, unfortunately. So the more, be nice to see a few more other companies starting to take the load. But, you know, the other thing is it's the job of the CEO to get out there and, like, we don't... you know, ring up the journalist, they just phone you for a comment because it's easy and they're trying to get that nice little hook. And so you do have to have a bit of a thick skin with the stuff, but it is quite fun as well.
Mm. What do you use in terms of, tools and so on for managing those social media platforms? Do you have an in-house team that sort of run that stuff, or you just, you know, individually you tweet and you know, post on, you know, LinkedIn and the like?
You know, I have a whole army of... comedians that write on my lines. You know, I do all my stuff myself, so you know, I've always blogged and done all that myself, and anything from me is from me. But we do have a social media team, and I think one of the interesting things about Xero was moving from, you know, in our marketing spend, not having people who are sort of doing real work then playing with social media on the side, is inverting that, and actually we have community managers and we pay them and they do all that sort of stuff. So, you know, that is absolutely real work. I mean, one of the interesting things about social media and business is it's inverted the customer care queue.
Mm.
So, you know, before, irate customers would be trapped inside the call center, having an even worse experience. And now any customer of any business can say, I'm having a bad time, and the business has to respond. So it's a very democratic thing. And I think in New Zealand it's amazing, you know, the ASB, Vodafone, Telecom have really shown how corporates can blog and have quite a bit of fun.
Absolutely.
Blog, tweet, and all that stuff.
Yeah. And how important do you think social media has been to the success of Xero? Because, you know, you can't be in, you know, every part of the world all the time, but, you know, social media lets you sort of generate a buzz and interact with people, you know, anywhere, anytime sort of thing.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, it's just amazing. It's been a big part of us, and what we're trying to do is amplify that. So accounting software is a word of mouth thing, so it amplifies. But we're using social media internally, so big issue, well, not an issue, but a big ongoing challenge with Xero as we keep doubling staff is how do you maintain the culture? So, you know, we use Yammer as our internal social networking platform, and in my DNA, it just made sense to overshare, to communicate. And I love that, you know, I'll be, you know, in a car with one of our team up in the north of England, and same sense of humor, we know them, know who they are, because, you know, we do share internally, so you are able to create this sort of global family. And it's quite interesting because we have, you know, our UK teams very different from our US team, but yet the culture and the values and all that are truly international. So using social media internally has been a great way that we build. And it's interesting, if I speak at a large corporate, the sort of IT or maybe the comms people are saying, we really want to roll out Yammer. How do we do that? How do we get executive support? Where I think modern companies, the executives are the ones driving it down through the business.
Absolutely. And I think, that totally changes the adoption and the use of these things, isn't it? It's very hard to sort of push up that type of communication and that way of operating.
Yeah, I mean, I get, you know, people tweet me saying it's unreal that a CEO tweets. Well, I still think of myself as an 18-year-old skateboarder, not a CEO. But but why wouldn't you? I just don't understand why. I mean, that's just what you do. You know.
Well, that's great. I think that wraps this up for this round. So thank you very much for joining us.
Now, thanks, guys.
Speaking of social media, where will we find you in the online world?
I'm Twitter at Rod Drury. Very easy.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Rod. It's been great to chat.
Thank you.
Okay. Cheers.